Hey everyone, it's Andy Bueller, statewide high school sports reporter and host of the Scorebook Live Today podcast. The coronavirus has shut down schools and halted high school sports, so we're going to take things up a notch here at Scorebook Live. Each day our own Dan Dickow is going to have on a new guest to this very podcast as a part of a special podcast series in addition to our weekly episode tackling the top stories across the state. The best way to keep up with that and what we do is head to scorebooklive.com/Washington, your home for Washington High School sports coverage, and subscribe to this podcast for free. Head to wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, or a couple examples. Look up Scorebook Life Today, hit subscribe, and while you're there, leave us a rating, a comment. It really helps us do what we do. Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, with our daily podcast interview. This time, joined by Coach Ed Haskins. Many of you on the west side will know him from being an assistant coach at Rainier Beach for a number of years before he guided Garfield to some incredible success. People on the east side might know him for a couple years stint as an assistant coach at Washington State. Very well respected, very well known basketball coach here in the state. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So you've got, some interesting kind of touch points along your basketball path, your basketball career. You grew up in Tacoma, but as most people know, kind of Tacoma-Seattle blends together, to produce a lot of really good basketball players and a lot of really good basketball coaches. Can you share a little bit about your youth, your upbringing, and what made you want to become a coach as you got older?
Actually got drafted by the Seahawks and played for the Seahawks and the Cowboys for football. He's such a great athlete. But he taught me really early on, man. I started coaching in 97. He taught me early on. One of the first things that he said to me, like, hey, whenever you stop caring about the kids, go up your whistle. And that stuck with me for my whole 23-year career.
Yeah, it's always interesting to listen to different coaches' path of how they really kind of got into it. You mentioned some middle school coaching. A lot of guys start, you know, in the AAU scene, and they just build and develop their network of coaches and their relationships within the industry until something makes sense for both sides. You mentioned two names that I think now, from an outsider perspective, I have a tremendous amount of respect for. But you have seen them in different ways at different levels. So first, Mike Bethea, he's done a tremendous job at Rainier Beach, leading young men and leading a tremendous program. What's the biggest takeaway that you learned from him?
Oh, man. I think the biggest takeaway I took away from Coach was just simply that you go out here with everything you have. You know, people see Coach and he's pretty demonstrative. You know, he's kind of like a Calipari. He's very demonstrative on the sideline. You know, does a lot of yelling, does a lot of whatever to guys. But I'm telling you, man, the guys love him. You know, you can see that by going on Instagram, Twitter, or whatever. And he's really created a culture down there of, you know, that's home. You can always come back. So all the pros that he's coached, all the tall guys that he's coached, which is incredible, they all come back. They all come back when they know they get a good open run, or they know they come talk to the guys, they give back the whole line. And I saw that there for, I was there for 9 years. And, you know, I think, you know, for me, that was one thing that, you know, that he taught me, was just to really love the kids and not just, you know, your players, and not just the players, but the whole school. And that's one thing that I really try to take with me across here. But he was just incredible. He just related really well to the guys and, you know, what have you. So he was definitely a player's coach, I would say.
And at the college level, you mentioned being able to meet George Raveling and listen to him speak when he was on a home visit with your brother. Was there any particular thing that stood out to George Raveling? I've had a few interactions with him over the years. I've found him to be a tremendous person, but also, obviously, he was a great coach. Was there anything that stood out to you about him and his message or his approach to recruiting your brother?
They said, you know, I mean, he was interacting with us. I was probably 7, 8 years old at the time. And, I mean, he was, you know, down there wrestling with us and, you know, just playing with us. And, you know, obviously, you know, I mean, as a college recruiter, you want to do everything you can to make, you know, a parent feel good and comfortable with you, that they'll take care of your son or your brother or whatever the case may be. And, I mean, with him, you know, and this was obviously, I was very young, but I think kids have better intuition than adults sometimes. And I just felt like it was very genuine. I felt like everything that he did with my family, and it was genuine. And what I loved about it, you know, at the end of those 5 years, my brother in the red shirt, at the end of those 5 years that my brother was there, he had done what he said he was going to do. He walked away with a degree. You know, he walked away being very successful, playing the time. He was one of two players, him and Clay Thompson, that actually played in the NCAA tournament twice from Washington State. And so, you know, we played in 80, and we played in 83, and that was one against, like, Brown Sampson and those guys. We lost them in the second round. And it was very, very just influential, man. And just, like I said, just his passion, his love for people. Even when I went over there to coach, people were still talking about Coach Raff, you know, and what his impact was, and how, once again, how genuine he was, and how much later. You know, there's few people that I've met like that in my life. Jamal Crawford's one of them. Like, where when you talk to Jamal, it seems like you're the only person in the room. You know, you don't care about anything else, anybody else going on, no matter how quick the conversation is or how long the conversation is. And that was George Raveling. And he was that guy. And another person was my brother, Aaron. So I think he picked a lot of that up from Coach Raveling.
That's some really phenomenal pieces that people can take out of characteristics of both those coaches, as well as Jamal. You know, Jamal's been, I've known him since high school when I was at University of Washington, and you make the comment there. I see a lot of those traits now, thinking back at the conversations I've had with Jamal, so that's very impressive. You learn from a number of coaches, and any coach wants their opportunity to run their own program at whatever level it is. You finally get your opportunity at Garfield. You probably have some thoughts that you took from Coach Bethea, some other thoughts from different coaches that you learned from along the way. How do you implement the culture that is yours into a program when you take it over?
Well, there's a saying in coaching that all the best coaches take balls, dude. So I think that for me, when you're sitting next to a guy like Coach Bethea, I actually had a chance 1 year sitting next to now Ole Miss coach Jason Kerr. We were at Franklin together for a year. And when you sit next to guys like that are winners, that know how to win, that know how to build it, that both build a program that were phenomenal, you know, I think that, or that are phenomenal, you know, and still are phenomenal. I think that what you do, you know, what I try to do is just put my own personality on Garfield when I did that, because I can't be, you know, Mike Fay, I can't be Jason Kerr, I can't be Coach Rav, you know, I can't be anybody else but me. And so I just try to let whatever came naturally to me in certain situations just kind of flow. And, you know, obviously, let me say this to make it very clear, obviously Garfield has an incredibly rich history, you know, of basketball. It didn't start with me. They won a couple championships since I've been gone with Brandon. You know, it didn't end with me, which is great. I think you always, whenever you get a program, you want to leave it better than what you found. And hopefully I did that at Garfield. Not just as head coach, but as athletic director there as well. But I think that ultimately, you know, for me, the traits like just doing what it takes to win, doing what it takes to teach young men how to become men, doing what it takes, you know, every day, you know, the things that nobody sees, you know, whether it be doing laundry, whether it be, you know, sweeping the floor, you know, whether it be going to the parents' house and talking to them, or, you know, other things that we have to do that nobody sees. And a little, I'm just being honest with you, you know, it's a year-round job, and in Seattle public schools, head coaches get about $5,000, you know, for the season, you know what I mean? And that's all year-round, you know, and there's no question about that. So, it has to be a calling. It's almost like I could never be an official. I don't know about you, Dan, but I could never be a basketball official. So I just couldn't do it, you know, but that's a calling, and being a coach is a calling, and so in a different way. So, yeah, I just think that for me, ultimately, it was just really about being who I am. You know, definitely there were things that I took from all three of the programs, also even the middle school program, that I was a part of. I took things from all three of those coaches. But I think that ultimately, the one thing that I loved about those three men was they all encouraged me to be me. And at one point or another, they all told me that, hey, you're going to be an head coach in the city one day, you know, do you. So I'm very, very thankful for that.
Some great advice given to you there, and thanks for sharing it with any coaches or parents or athletes that are listening to this podcast. You spent a couple years, in Pullman as an assistant coach at Washington State. You were back in the Seattle area now. You didn't coach this year. Do you see coaching in your future? And if so, what do you hope to take from your Washington State experience into your next head coaching position?
Oh my God, it was such a learning experience at that level. It was incredible. And any time, like I just made a reference to, you know, a $5,000 stipend for doing something that the public school system sees you do 3 months, but ultimately it's a year-round job. Now, being able to do and focus only solely on basketball for 24 months was incredible. It was an incredible experience. Doing basketball and his relationship with the guys, whether it's going to their apartments, going to dorm rooms, getting set up, you know, recruiting, whatever the case may be. It was an incredible experience. And working under who I think will be a Hall of Famer real soon, you know, Coach Ernie Kidd, was just outstanding. You know, an incredible offensive mind. You know, that, I mean, he could do things that I have never seen before up close, you know, with a coach. And, you know, we had a tough time over there. You know, the 2 years I was there, but I definitely wouldn't go back on the decision I made, you know, to go to Washington State for a few reasons. But one of the main reasons was I got to work under a guy like him. I got to, you know, see some things that I had never seen before, be exposed to some things that I had never been exposed to before at the highest level of college basketball. So it was a great, great situation. And I'm actually, we're actually getting ready to, the family and I are getting ready to head on down to LA and do some different things down there. But we hope, we definitely hope that Coach is in our future. We love it. We're still very passionate about it. I'm not too old yet. I'm 40, so I'm not too old yet. I think that there is I think there's a place for me somewhere. And honestly, having done what I did in Washington State, that was a dream of mine. You know, just like Garfield, you know, I grew up going to Garfield games and watching the greatest coach of Garfield history, Al Harrison, you know, watching him coach and how he carried the program. That was a big influence just by watching him from afar. And we tried to do that as well. But just really honestly and truly, I feel like it doesn't matter what level. You know, if I can even take Coach Harrison for example, Coach Nick Garfield, the head coach of Seattle, he went to UW, you know, then came back to high school. And there's no shame in that. There's absolutely no shame in that. If you love the game, you're going to do it for the right reasons and with the right intent. And it doesn't matter what level that you're at. It just matters that you're doing what you're passionate about and that you're helping to be a man.
Yeah, some great words there. One last question before I let you go. Then this is, I'm sure, going to be a really tough one because there's a lot of directions you can go with this answer. Best player you've ever seen come out of the Seattle area?
Okay, I actually, somebody on Facebook posted this question. They're actually responding to it. So it's two different things. Okay, and the first thing I would say is this, is that Michael Porter Jr. is not from Seattle, and I don't think Michael Porter Jr. actually claimed Seattle, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, Seattle, Washington. So, it's not about that. His situation, to me, is different. He has to put in his own category. Okay? Now, the best player that I've ever coached against is Michael Porter Jr. Okay? Now, if he's from Seattle, no, he's not. Okay? I would say Michael Porter Jr., I could say Markelle Fultz, my coach against him, and Les Schwab, those guys. But the best player that I've ever coached or I've ever seen come out of Seattle, the most dominant, I don't know. Dominant's different. People say Shaq's most dominant, but Michael's the best player. Geez, man, that is a, you're right, you could go a lot of ways with this. here's the other thing. We actually, this way you always in my Elvis Kasner, posted something on Twitter yesterday, and he gave his top 10. I said, well, my question is, are you talking about from K-12, or are you talking about post, as well, their whole basketball career? So I have to maybe ask you a clarifying question. Are we talking about whole basketball career, or are we talking about, you know, up until high school?
Yeah, I would say best player at the high school level. So yeah, it's a tough one.
I would say one of the best players is two players Roderick and Roderick Stewart. And with the Twins at Rainier Beach, I would also say Tony Roden, who was very, very dominant at Garfield. And then I would also say Doug Wren. That's kind of when I came on the scene. I saw obviously people earlier because I just come up all the time. But those four guys, and then obviously, you know, you have to put, I mean, Jamal was, nobody has seen anything like Jamal before. You know, he did stuff in high school. Actually, I remember playing with him against him in the pro-am, the Dodgers in the pro-am, the summer before his senior year. And it was just like, he was just, he was almost a man amongst men.
Sure.
He was playing his pros. And, you know, he was 16, 17 years old. So nobody has seen anything like Jamal. Obviously, all those guys that I've just mentioned, outside of Tony, you know, were state champions, took their team state championships. And I don't blame it on Tony for being the championship game my first year. I blame it on myself, so it's not his fault. It's on me. We lost the federal way. But so those guys, man, you really can't. Long answer, because it's just so, it's such a delicate question in Seattle basketball. And a long answer to say, you know what, man, honestly, there's been a lot of great guys, including yourself, obviously, yeah, but, you know, you, Luke, you know, I think about Adam Morris, you know, not just Seattle itself, I think about over Washington. You know, I remember when Adam came over and played Mike in my All-Star game that I used to do in 2003 with Aaron Brooks and the Twins, and he dominated. He had an incredible game. I think he had like 30-something that day. You know, his dad was great. You know, he thought that's the one. He was thankful for the opportunity, but, you know, Adam was an incredible player. So, there's just a lot, man. I mean, I think for us being Americans in this corner of the country, you know, to have so much come out, it's incredible. And that's a kudos to the family, the parents, the coaching, you know, and the players, obviously, themselves.
I would agree. It's very hard to pick out one or even two players. So I like the list. You put a number of good guys that have been mentioned by others when I posed the same question. So, Coach, we appreciate you joining. We look forward to having you back on the sideline again at some point when the time's right for you and your family. And thanks for being a big supporter of Scorebook Live.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, thank you, and congrats on so much success with Scorebook Live. I mean, you got to start the band now. It's really skyrocketed. So congratulations, man. You guys stay safe out there, and we'll get through this together.
All right. Thanks, Coach.